Welcome to the Church Multiplication Collective podcast. This is a podcast designed to help you multiply like never before. I'm your host, Ed Love, and I oversee the Church Multiplication Collective, which is an intentional community of Wesleyan leaders committed to discovering, developing, and deploying workers for the Lord's harvest. And today I am pumped. We're going to be talking to the Donnie Griggs. Donnie Griggs is the author of Small Town Jesus, which is a awesome book on the topic of reaching the small town, the rural communities through church planting. Donnie's been in church planting himself from North Carolina, and he's planted the church. It's called One Harbor Church, and his passion is to see churches in small towns and rural areas equipped and empowered to radically engage culture and make disciples. And because of his passion, in addition to leading One Harbor Church, Donnie also travels frequently throughout the U.S. and internationally to help strengthen and encourage other church leaders and planters. And we are blessed to have him here on the show. Welcome, Donnie.
Man, it's great to be here. Thanks so much.
Glad you're here with us. And I'm excited about this topic. You know, it's one of these topics that we've kind of brushed off to the side. There's very few books on the topic, and when yours came out, I was like, oh, finally someone's speaking to this particular zone. And it's an important one because we really believe all people matter to God, and we would love to see, you know, plans for churches being planted in the urban, the suburban, and the rural context. And every context has a different challenge, but this one really, I think your book just really opens us up, kind of draws you in, and thanks for writing that, doing the work on that. So, yeah, appreciate that. Why don't you just give us a little bit of your backstory first, so we kind of know where you're coming from, and then we'll drop into this topic of rural church planning.
Cool. So I was born and raised in a little town called Morehead City, North Carolina, which is kind of the bottom of the Outer Banks. If you're familiar with North Carolina, it's the part of North Carolina that's out in the ocean. So the very bottom, I grew up here. There's a book about our town, and on the cover is my mom as a little girl holding a fishing pole with her granddad. And so anyway, very local, never wanted to leave, never went on a plane until I was 18 years old. And when I went on a plane, I ended up moving to Texas and joining a ministry, kind of left all this behind and traveled overseas a whole bunch. And then after about 4 years there, I moved to California and joined a church that planted other churches. I'd never heard of church planting before. And so I joined this church, and for 5 years, heard about church planting and met church planters. And God just began to work on my heart. Man, I want to do this. You know, I feel like this is what I'm called to do. So we ended up back here visiting the area where I'm from, and just randomly on a trip, me and my wife, who I met in California, and a bunch of my friends from high school. It's a small town, so you know everybody kind of thing. And it felt like everybody I ran into was in a race to see who could go to hell the fastest, you know? And just didn't feel like, it just felt like it was missing a church that was really willing to do kind of anything short of sin, to see these guys, you know, hear the gospel and be changed by the gospel. And so really God broke our heart, and we had no intention of ever being back here. But long story short, within 8 months of that first meeting back, we had moved here, relocated, and showed up with no money. We flipped our car on the way here, so we hit black ice in Texas. And so we showed up with no car, no house, no jobs, 8 people, you know, basically everything we say you need in the church. Got here on a Friday night and started the church on Sunday morning. That was 8.5 years ago. And man, God has just really been kind to us. We kind of anticipated, because the town was so small, that, you know, probably we'd be looking at 9 years down the road, maybe 30 people in a living room kind of thing. And we were really okay with that. You know, it was worth doing. Just it went a different way. And people kept getting saved. I mean, from the second week that we started, a guy showed up on his way to kill himself. Mm. We didn't know that, but he showed up and, man, just got radically saved and begin to bring people, lie to people, pick up hitchhikers. I mean, it was amazing. Just kept dragging people to church and just grew and until, you know, finally we had to start going to multi-services, and then we ended up going multi-site, and we're about to start our fourth location. We're now looking at probably planting another, hopefully we want to plant up to 15 locations across our region. So that's kind of the backstory. It's a lot in a nutshell there, but yeah.
Wow. So why do you think you're drawn into this realm of the small town, the rural culture?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm from here, and I mean, I've always like, I am from a small town. I'm indigenous, and so I love it. And I lived in LA for a while, and that was an odd experience for me. But it is who I am. So that's one side of it. But you know, really what happened, Ed, I heard a church planner in New York talk about how he's trying to reach New York, like acupuncture. He was going to plant churches in really stressful, like, parts of the city, and it was, you know, like the gospel was going to ease the tension, and it was just this really compelling concept I'd never thought about. And so I sat down, at this conference hearing this guy speak, and I still got this little journal. I wrote on the back, I was like, I just looked at a map real quick of Eastern North Carolina, and I thought, what are the nerve centers across Eastern North Carolina? And so I wrote down 15 different little towns, including the one that I'd planted in. And then I sat there looking at the list, and I realized there is not a single person on planet Earth at a Bible college or anything that has remotely any ambition to start a church in any of these towns.
Right.
It's never going to happen. If I mean, honestly, nobody ever wants to go to Austin, or they want to go to Raleigh, or they want to go to, I mean, everybody wants to go to the same places, you know? And so it really hit me that, like, no one cared about these people. But we serve a God who cares about everybody, you know? Acts 9, it's a guy named Aeneas, who nobody knows who he is, but the Bible puts his name in there as a guy who gets his legs healed. It's just these evidences like that of just God cares about nobodies. Like, he cares, I mean, 1 Corinthians 1, he cares about the Wernuts, you know? We're about to plant in a town called Havelock, and the local people call the town Havelock because there's just nothing there. And so, but Jesus cares about places like that, you know? So it just hit me that, like, nobody's going to go to these places. God cares about these places. And then I started realizing it's not just Eastern North Carolina, it's everywhere. I mean, it's every world. It's full of. I met a guy from Australia who told me he said, we are a nation of small towns. I'm working with guys in rural Northern Ireland, guys in Wales, guys in South Africa, there's so many. I mean, if you take America, it's basically every 12 miles if you spread it out. We've got a small town. So it's everywhere. And then you go to the Bible, and Jesus actually goes to these little places. He's born in a little place. He sees disciples to little places. And I don't know, man, just more and more I realized what we've tried is not working. You know, focus on the big city and fingers crossed somebody will get saved and go to a small town is cruel, and it's not working. And we need to do both, because Jesus did both, and the whole concept that the thought that, like, I think a lot of church planners are probably thinking, I want to get a bunch of Twitter followers, I want to drink good small batch coffee, and my wife will not go anywhere without a Target. Like, that's just bad. That's really bad criteria for where we're going to go to ministry, you know? So that's why I care about it.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And you can tell it's just, it's in you. It's your heart, it's your wiring. Part of that's how you were raised too, you know? And often, I mean, it does get forgotten. Yeah. Like, we write it off as, I mean, a lot of times, and I've been in the church planning culture for long enough to know the conversations that, you know, I mean, it's usually like the questions of where to plant. It's where's the, you know, the top 10 hit list, where's the top fastest growing churches or communities.
Right.
You know, and we're going to go there because it's new growth that, you know, we're going to capture those people, you know? And so, I mean, that gets a lot of attention, and that's right. Probably good too. I mean, we need that too. But then you don't hear the conversations of, you know, we're going to places that actually feel really hard and they're poor. Yeah. And it might not feel easy to, you know, not that church planting ever feels easy, but, you know, you just don't hear it talked about. And so that's why I'm grateful that we can just kind of lift this up, have the conversation, and maybe there's people who, like yourself, you know, that just feel inspired for communities and all over, you know, the country and the world. What would you say are some advantages planting in the small town, the rural communities? So, I mean, your ministry is thriving, you know, you're doing okay for yourself, and the folks can't see it, but you got a nice fluffy beard there, you know, and it's in the ministry's thriving. People are coming to Christ. The gospel's doing its work. You know, so it's happening. I'm sure you've got plenty of stories of, it's felt hard at some points, but, when you think about the advantages, what would you say?
Man, it's a great question. So I think what we found that was surprising to me is how much redemptive potential there really is in these small towns.
That's good.
I mean, the reality is that we're meeting people all the time, kind of 30 years old and younger, in small towns in the South who've never gone to church. I mean, a girl told me this last year, Easter, she said, this is a girl I know in town, I invited her to church for Easter, and she's like, well, we don't really do that. And I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, there's a reason why. She's like, I just think it's dumb. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, well, what's the deal with bunnies and eggs and all? I don't know why we want to do that. And I was like, well, you know that that's not really what Easter's about. You know, it's about Jesus coming back from the dead. And she had never heard that
In
her life.
Wow.
And I just think we take for granted that, like, everyone in a small town goes to church. I think one of the most exciting things is the redemptive potential. I mean, we are dealing with lots and lots of people who are just lost, man. And frankly, a lot of people have never, if they even have heard the gospel, have never heard a really compelling case for the gospel, a compelling presentation of the gospel. I had a lady come up to us, and she was leaving. This is right at the very beginning of the church, kind of 2 months in. And she said, did you say that that Jesus loved me just because he loves me? Not because of anything, not because I did the right thing or voted for the right person or whatever. I was like, of course, yeah, that's what I said. And she's just crying because I've been to church for 37 years, every Sunday and every Wednesday night, I've never heard that.
Wow.
So a lot of what has been preached, this is not exclusive. I mean, I don't want to sound like there's nothing good out there. But I can say that a lot of what's gone on has been moralism at best. And really it's left people, moralism will crush you, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it leads to pride or despair. It doesn't lead to hope and joy. And so we've got a lot of people who have never heard the gospel. And then we've got a lot of people who think they've heard the gospel, but aren't like, they're actually just trying to be good moral people. So this massive harvest, you know, to be reaped. And I think too, man, a lot of these folks have never been taken seriously. I know when I planted a church in a small town, honestly, I would have never said this out loud, but I felt like I got bumped by God, you know? Like, clearly, God doesn't want to do anything important with my life because he lives in such a small place, you know? And I mean, I think, candidly, even though we all would agree that, you know, church planting is important in big cities and small towns, if you come across a guy who's like a phenomenal church planter and you hear he's going to a town of 250 people, if you got to be honest, something inside of you probably thinks, this guy's really wasting his potential.
Right.
Really wasting his life, you know? We're still not really okay. Even the ones of us who kind of drink the Kool-Aid on this thing, we still feel like we should be sending our absolute best, you know, to a small town. I mean, it's kind of a waste. I think when you send somebody who's a quality church planner and they love this place and they take the people seriously, and they do ministry in a relevant, current way that, like, that addresses the questions and the tensions and puts the gospel on display, man, you can make a massive splash. I mean, I'm a big guy. When I do a cannonball in a pool, everybody gets wet, right? But if I do a cannonball in the ocean, it's not the same effect. And I feel like, man, if you come in and you plant a church and you take it seriously and go for it in a small town, and you can get everybody wet pretty quick, you know?
I mean,
you can make a really big splash.
Yeah.
So we have seen that. And, I mean, again, you want to stay faithful. You want to stay humble. But, man, it's just remarkable to me that the amount of impact you can really have, you know?
That's right. And, you know, I think it does carry a unique type of person. You're kind of getting to this a little bit. Like you got to take the community seriously. You got to be willing to invest in people's lives. You got to be relational. Because that's your street cred, you know, in a small town. It's not really your program.
Yeah.
Even though everything still needs to have a relevant vibe, sure. I think, in our culture. What would you say, go a little deeper on that, what would be some of the qualities that you would say make a great small town church planner?
Yeah. I mean, I do think, so I'll say one of the things that we've seen is a guy who can preach and lead in a way that makes sense to people. What we've seen happen a lot is, you know, kind of pastors preaching 30,000 feet of everyone's head, you know, like their professors from Bible college are sitting in the back and want to get an A on the paper. But nobody understands what they're saying, you know? And really, I think small town folks are really put off by that. It's pretentious. You know, this sort of like, let me see how many big words I can work into one sermon. It's just pretentious. It's off-putting, you know?
Yep.
I think that's one of the things we try to work hard on is everything we do from the front. I mean, we'll talk about something outside of a Sunday, but when you do get together, man, everything you do, trying to do in a way that makes sense, you know? Try to speak where you're speaking to the people, you know? You're not speaking over their head. You're not like pulling from examples that don't matter to them. That builds up local credibility, you know, where people are like, man, this guy gets us. He's talking about us, you know?
Yep.
Here's another thing I would say is local, like in a small town, you know, even if you're not from there, it needs to feel like you're from there, you know? And so I'll say to guys all the time, I'll say, hey, when you talk about church, like your town from, you know, when people hear you talk about the town, are you saying this town or are you saying my town?
Right.
And they'll say, well, what's the big deal? It sounds pedantic, you know? I'll say, well, what about this? What if you heard me talk about my wife? And I said, this wife, you know, this wife and these kids, not my wife and my kids, you know? I mean, it's subtle.
Oh, yeah.
But after a while, you start thinking, something's wrong with this dude. I don't think he really loves his kids,
yep.
You know? I think that kind of stuff, man, people pick up on that.
They do.
They talk about, man, this is my town. I'm from here. This is our town. And even if you're not from there, man, you need to love the place like you're from there, you know?
Yep.
I mean, I talk about this a lot in the book, man, but that whole thing of, like, being a good local, it cannot be overstressed.
I mean, it's
supporting local. It's loving local. It's – you don't come in and make comments like, oh, I could get this so much cheaper on Amazon and, you know, the coffee's so much better in this other city. I mean, that stuff – I mean, overnight, nobody will want to talk to you or hear from you ever again, you know? I mean –
yeah.
You can't be a jerk. You can't. So it's really just appreciating the fact that you are doing ministry in a fishbowl, you know? And, you know, you can't offend a whole bunch of people because you don't have, like, endless thousands of multitudes who you can keep, you know, having a first impression with. It's really easy to mess it all up pretty quick, you know?
Oh, yes. So, yeah, that's good.
That's some of the stuff I'd say, you know?
That's really helpful. You know, the fellow who followed me up at my last church that we had planted in a small town, it's called The Well, and he came in, he grew up there, and he's doing such a great job leading. Joel Lightbrandt's his name. And one of the first things that he did was he, you always have these church shirts, you know, and I don't know, I've never been a big fan of church shirts, but people want to have them. But he came up with one, like the church shirt just says, I love, I heart, I own you. And it's like communicating pride in our community and saying we're here for this community and we're going to serve this community. And it's just done he's just done a great job of communicating those values.
Yeah.
And that speaks. That's powerful, you know?
Absolutely, man.
So that's cool.
Our Beaufort site, Beaufort is a town known for like piracy. Blackbeard the pirate was there, and his boat sunk off the beach there. And they created a shirt in like pirate font that said "We Heart Beaufort," but like through the heart was like two pirate swords, and it was all like,
yeah.
Man, I see people who would never go to our church walk around wearing that shirt, you know. But it's that kind of stuff where you just like when people start realizing you love the place, man. Love, even if you're not from there, love can cover a whole bunch of stuff, man.
Oh yeah.
You mourn when they mourn. You celebrate when you celebrate. Their favorite food is your favorite food. I mean, that stuff goes a long way, man. You know?
That's right. That's good. Talk about just some of the needs that a church planner might need to be aware of in a small town setting. Like, you know, just some of the unique dynamics of the small town. Say a sending church is looking to say, hey, we want to plant in a small town. What do they need to know?
Yeah. I think probably the first thing I would say is get a really good grasp of modern, what it means to be modern small town or modern rural. So many guys have like an idolized, idyllic, you know, Andy Griffith show, kind of the Notebook, sort of like, it's a Hollywood version of what small towns are like. And that just isn't reality. The Wall Street Journal put out an article a few weeks ago. And basically the title of the article was, you know, that rural America is the new urban. It's what's been talked about for years. I mean, it's not been talked about in church planning forums, but man, sociologists and government officials are talking about this, that, I mean, if you're an eighth grader in rural America, you're 104% more likely to use methamphetamines than you are if you're an eighth grader in urban centers. That's right. Insane. 83% more likely to be on crack if you're an eighth grader in a rural town. So just get a really good handle on the current modern brokenness in small town America. I was in West Virginia recently with a bunch of church planners. A guy said that his state was leaving a legacy of alcoholism, heroin, and depression. Yep. My brother, you know, my own brother got locked up a week and a half ago on felony narcotics charges. I feel like I'm at a funeral once a week for somebody in our town who's overdosed or killed themselves drug related, you know? So the first thing I'd say is get somebody who knows what they're getting into, you know, get a real current handle on what needs to be done, you know? Because if you kind of go in thinking everyone's going to sit on the porch and drink sweet tea, you know, that'll happen every now and again, but not enough to make it worth it, you know?
Yes.
So that's the first thing. I would say, you know, another thing you can do is just make sure that somebody who's getting into it is getting into it for the right reasons. So talk about ambition. You know, the last thing that we need to do in small town America and rural America is send a whole bunch of church planners who have really great potential, but see this church plan as a stepping stone. What we don't want to have is 10 years from now, a bunch of, you know, those church plants don't exist anymore because the guy came in to get basically cut his teeth so he could move into something better, you know? So we need guys to go in without a back door, you know? I mean, it would literally take, I think, another incarnation of Jesus to get me to leave here, you know? I mean, something short of that. It would be pretty close to that. I came here with no back door, you know, because it's going to take a very long time to make real change here. I mean, we're talking decades to really change the culture.
Yep.
So I think preparing church planners who are going to go in with their hands on the plow, they're not looking left, right, they're not looking back, they're gonna be there for the long haul, you know, unless God does something otherwise. And then I think another thing, if I was a multiplying church wanting to do this, I would find other churches that are already doing it and try to learn from them. You know, get guys. I mean, I do a lot of coaching for church planners. I was coaching a guy a few minutes ago before we started this, who's in Moore, Oklahoma, who's planting a church. Find guys who are doing it and get them to teach you how, and don't learn things the hard way. You know, so yeah, those are some things that kind of jump out. You know, there's not a ton of resources out yet. I wish there were. I mean, I'm sad that my book is like one of the only few. I mean, because I know there's smarter guys than me, you know, but that'll come. And, you know, we're starting to see different, like, seminaries begin to, like, consider, you know, rural/small town church planning tracks, which they need to.
Yep.
I mean, if we're going to take ministry seriously, you can't just offer an urban church planting tract because everybody thinks that because it's something that's offered, they think that's what's important, you know? So eventually that stuff will come, but until then, you know, just wear people out who are doing it well, you know, learn everything you can.
That's good. So here it is. Know the brokenness of the community. Know your motives. Know backdoor. And know who's who. Find your people. There it is. There's your four point.
What? You should have written a book, Ed. That's, good right there, that's the sequel.
We'll have to do one. Hey, that's great. I was going to ask you if there's any other good resources that people might be able to tap into besides your book. Do you go to anything else?
Yeah, so there's a couple like groups on Facebook. There's like the Small Town Big Church Network. There's Rural Matters is a thing that I'm involved with Ed Stetzer and a few other guys, Shannon O'Dell and some other folks. I do a lot of these like Small Town Jesus conferences. You can check out smalltownjesus.com. I write blogs on there. I'm on Twitter and Facebook doing lots, like always talking about stuff. And I'm trying to like find articles and find stuff that's helpful and repost it. So I mean, if this is something you're really interested in, you can check it out. I'm trying to just be a constant resource for this stuff, you know? So yeah, those are some things I'd check out right away.
Say your website again,
smalltownjesus.com.
Smalltownjesus.com, everybody. Yep. Check that out. And to the listeners here, Small Town Jesus, it's worth the read. So highly recommend it. Gives you some great perspective and really dives into this topic deeper. So it's so good. And I think in a way it's we ultimately, you know, we want to fulfill Acts 1:8.
Right.
And Jesus said to go into Jerusalem, Judea, which was the countryside, and then Samaria. It's that hard place that you don't really want to go to, but you got to get there, and then to the ends of the earth. And, you know, we've been given that command, and what would it look like for our churches to all have a vision and strategy that matched Acts 1:8?
Yeah. Amen.
And maybe that vision and strategy includes urban.
Totally.
Maybe urban's easy for you. Maybe that's your countryside. But maybe there's another place, you know, that would be your Judea. And so just let's leave it at that, and we'll let people allow the Lord to lead them where they are led. Thank you so much, Donnie. This has been really helpful, and so glad that you took a little time with us today. So
really a privilege, man. Thank you very much.
Yep. Grateful. So we're going to sign off here, and you've been listening to the Church Multiplication Collective podcast. We'll see you next time, everybody.